Coming up on Harvard Chan This Week in Health, new links between Zika and a form of temporary paralysis, you'll hear a top federal official weigh in on the outbreak. Plus, researchers say that cutting the price of fruits and vegetables could save hundreds of thousands of lives. And it's almost time to spring forward, how losing that 1 hour of sleep could affect your health. Hello and welcome to Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Amy Montemiro.
And I'm Noah Levitt. Amy, topping our news this week, scientists say they have new evidence linking Zika virus to a form of temporary paralysis known as Guillain-Barré syndrome. That new study was published this week in The Lancet.
Researchers looked at 42 people in French Polynesia who became ill during a previous Zika outbreak and found that they developed Guillain-Barré within 6 days of being infected. Guillain-Barré is rarely fatal, but it can lead to muscle weakness and, in severe cases, breathing problems requiring intensive care.
Zika, of course, has been more widely linked with the birth defect microcephaly. And Reuters reports that there are now more than 4,800 cases of that birth defect in Brazil alone.
In the meantime, this week President Obama formally requested $1.9 billion from Congress to fight the outbreak. One of the leaders of the federal response has been Anthony Fauci, head of the NIH's National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Fauci visited the Harvard Chan School and spoke during a special webcast on the Zika outbreak.
Fauci talked about how Zika could impact the United States in the weeks and months ahead.
We certainly will have many more imported cases. We already have well over 100 imported cases right now. We have local transmission in Puerto Rico and in the Virgin Islands and American Samoa. What likely will happen is that we will see something similar to what we have seen in the past with dengue and with chikungunya. I think people don't fully appreciate that on any given year, there's between 30 and 40 million people go back and forth between the United States and South America, Central America, and the Caribbean. Among those are an awful lot of pregnant women, for example, but there are all people who are not pregnant. They just keep coming back and forth. So we're going to have more and more imported cases. When that happens, you almost inevitably, particularly in the part of our country in the South, eastern part in the Gulf Coast, Texas, Florida, and others, we will see local transmitted cases. If it acts like dengue and chikungunya in the past, those local outbreaks will be well controlled by an aggressive mosquito control program, because we have seen both. We've seen a dengue outbreaks both in Texas and in Florida, and we've seen a chikungunya local outbreak in Florida, all of which were suppressed. We can't say for sure that we're not going to have a major outbreak in the United States. I do not think we will, but we will be prepared for it anyway.
To hear more of Fauci's comments, you can visit forumhsph.org.
Cutting the price of fruits and vegetables could save hundreds of thousands of lives. That's the message from researchers this week at the American Heart Association's annual epidemiology meeting.
Amy, scientists at Tufts University and Imperial College in London argue that cutting the price of fruits and veggies by 30% could prevent 200,000 premature deaths over the next 15 years. According to NPR, those researchers created a computer model that showed how reduced prices on produce could result in greater consumption and in turn lead to fewer deaths from heart disease and stroke.
Noah, the researchers also say that making healthy food more affordable may be a more effective strategy than traditional campaigns that urge people to eat more fruits and vegetables. The findings don't suggest any specific ways that prices could be lowered, but experts say that one option may be providing fruit and vegetable subsidies at the farm or wholesaler level.
If you have more moles, are you at a greater risk for skin cancer?
Not necessarily, according to a new study from the Harvard Chan School. The new study was led by Alan Geller, a senior lecturer on social and behavioral sciences at the school.
Amy, Geller's research found that people with more than 50 moles across their body have a dramatically reduced risk of developing more invasive melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer. In fact, the study found that people with a small amount of irregular moles were at the greatest risk for cancer.
There's no specific explanation for these findings, but Geller told Stat that his research underscores the need for everyone to have a baseline skin exam and to pay particular attention to unusual moles. Melanoma kills one person every 57 minutes, but does have a high cure rate. So Geller says early detection is key.
The head of the Environmental Protection Agency says that the entire water system in Flint, Michigan may need to be replaced after the city's water became contaminated with lead.
Gina McCarthy spoke this week at the Harvard Chan School as part of the Voices in Leadership interview series. She says that the EPA found out about the situation in Flint far too late.
That's a situation where a community had an emergency manager come in and decide to save money by switching to an untreated source of drinking water. And they decided they weren't going to treat the drinking water to make sure it wasn't corrosive and wouldn't leach the lead out of the pipes. And EPA didn't find this out until quite late in the game. The EPA's job right now is to take water samples to make sure that the kids that shouldn't be drinking the water aren't, that everybody has filtered water. We're doing all the analysis, because the analysis, the lab analysis, the water testing needs to make sure that there's chlorine in the system effectively, that the corrosion control system is now up and functioning and going to be optimized. Then the community wants to look at lead line replacement, which is fine, but lead line replacement is not the only source of lead that people get. And so we have to keep working through that. There's lead pipes in a lot of the older homes out there, and that's as big a problem as the lead lines. Its water system needs a complete, really complete reinvestment, never mind the lead issue.
McCarthy also told the audience that she is taking the situation in Flint very personally. Visit hsph.me/voices to watch the full interview.
In recent episodes, we've been taking a closer look at the links between inequality and health in America, from the impact of income on life expectancy to the ways the country's health system needs to be reformed.
And we want to return to that issue of income. We know there are clear links between how much you make and how healthy you are, and sometimes the connections between money and health are not obvious. We spoke about this with Subbu Subramanian, professor of population health and geography at the Harvard Chan School. He says that making more money offers people both material benefits and some intangible benefits.
So I guess there are really sort of two pathways that I see. One is sort of more material. When you have a certain type of a job, you get a certain type of income that then allows you, there's a very, very clear correlation between having more money and better health. No questions about it. The other type is, I think, a combination of through education and, let's say, a good job, the community that you belong to, your ability to probably make certain choices, not in some minute sense, what am I eating today or not, but in the larger frame of things. How do I think about future, or how do I think about my kids or their future? If you put a kid well-fed, well-nourished, well-clothed, but you put them in a community which is very safe, stable, and participatory, etc., they get challenged. They see, it's quite okay to participate in these things. The norms are different, right? All these other activities then exposes you to a different social network. These are the connections that you're going to build and last, right? To me, is a more evolved state rather than trying to just struggle to get by, And there is a lot of research to show that how our brains are somewhat becomes truly constrained when you're in a survival mode. Poverty can be a very constraining on your ability to imagine and do things.
Subramanian also told us that there are reasons to be optimistic about health in America. For example, life expectancy among Blacks in America has increased sharply in recent decades, but he did acknowledge that more work needs to be done to close the life expectancy gap between Black and white Americans. Finally in this episode, it's almost time to spring forward.
That's right, Amy. On March 13th, we'll all push our clocks forward an hour and lose some sleep as daylight saving time begins.
And while an hour of lost sleep may seem trivial, it could affect our health. Researchers in Finland looked at data from 3,000 people and found that in the first 2 days after the time switch, the overall stroke rate increased by 8%.
This research was presented at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology. The scientists behind the study say more research is needed to prove that connection, but there is other evidence that daylight saving time could have some negative effects. Charles Seisler, professor of sleep medicine at Harvard Medical School, explains.
Epidemiologists have looked at this carefully, And in, for example, on that Monday morning, there is a 6 to 17% increase in motor vehicle crashes on the nation's highways, including a 17% increase in fatal crashes, alcohol-related fatalities, as well as studies in Sweden where they've gone through 20 years of myocardial infarction data have shown a 5% increase in the occurrence of heart attacks in the week following this 1 hour loss of sleep. So can you imagine? And in the fall, when we add an hour back to our sleep time, the rate of heart attacks drops by 5%.
And Seisler says that these changes show just how sensitive our bodies can be to changes in our sleep patterns.
Yeah, I think I'm still catching up from last year, so I should get some extra sleep this weekend.
Just wait till November and you'll get that extra hour that night.
Good to know.
There's a payoff at the end. We just have to wait for it.
An investment.
Exactly. That's all for Harvard Chan this week in health. I'm Noah Levitt.
And I'm Amy Montemiro. Listen to this podcast anytime by visiting our SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/Harvard Public Health, or visit hsph.me/thisweekinhealth to learn how you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.